Introduce yourself, please.
State Representative Linda Gallagher from Kansas, District 23.
A familiar voice to State House Blend listeners, and we're going to talk to Linda more, but first the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
Joining Linda and myself today in the KCUR 89.3 production studio is Cameron Baraban from Overland Park. Cameron, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And my KCUR colleague Maria Carter, who runs our news operation. Happy to have you back on State House Blend.
Glad to be here on a Saturday.
All right. We've been lucky enough to have Representative Gallagher on the podcast before, so you know what is next.
Sure.
We're looking for an update on your two kids and your pets.
My husband, Mike, and I have two daughters in their 20s, and I do have updates on them. Our oldest daughter, Lori, has gone back to school this fall at Kansas State University to study elementary education for a second degree.
And, wait, let me just stop it. Where's her first one from?
From KU.
And that's in?
In journalism.
All right.
So she's decided to do a
180 something good with
and
her
do
life?
Something different. And no, she does not want to stay in Kansas when she graduates for reasons we'll probably get into in this podcast.
All right, we can certainly talk about that. Another update on your daughter?
Yes, her other daughter, Katie, graduated from the University of Arkansas this spring and is gainfully employed in Phoenix with General Motors as a software testing analyst.
Wow. And the pets?
Still have the same pets, cat Smokey and a dog Aphrodite.
Yeah, you know what? I should have explored Aphrodite before, and maybe if we have time at the end, we will, but we do have to
sure.
Move on. A couple things I want to get to, KDOT funding. There's a big education committee meeting coming up this week, and I think that we'll probably touch on guns. But first, let's take our first trip around the table, and I want to hear what's on your mind, Cameron.
So, yeah, first, thank you so much for being here today. I think this is a really great opportunity to interface with someone that I might not necessarily have the opportunity
sure.
to. So from my perspective, I think any elected official from the president all the way down to yourself is essentially in a position where they represent the majority vote that was able to put them into office in the first place. And I think today, as far as the election system is concerned, there are so many other opportunities to not hear just from the majority that enabled you to be in the position that you're in, but also the outliers. And I think mm-hmm. social media and other services or other support groups or anything that could be really open up your audience in terms of soliciting that feedback and those opinions. So while you may hold a personal belief or the belief of the majority, how important is it to you to rely on those tools to actually get the feedback from some of the other voices or opinions to see if there's not necessarily a way to compromise, but just to ensure that the people you represent have been heard?
Well, first of all, it is very important to me that I represent the people of District 23, which includes parts of Shawnee, Lenexa, and Overland Park. It's very important for me to get feedback from my constituents any way they want to reach me, whether it's snail mail, email, phone calls, mm-hmm. personal visits at my town hall meetings or a request to meet with me. And I also get feedback through Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel that I need to establish more contacts with people in my district, get more email addresses to put them on my newsletter email list. It's important for legislators to hear from their constituents. And believe it or not, not all of my colleagues seem to have that as a priority.
Let me just follow up and ask, so in the last year, what do you think was the most divergent opinions that you had? Was it in education where you had the broadest range of opinions on the budget? Where do you think the disagreement is in your district?
You mean divergence of opinions
right,
from
your
sides?
Constituent, right.
I would say probably guns.
Oh, that's interesting.
Education, the majority of the people I heard from are all in solidarity that we need to do more to support public education. The budget, the majority of my constituents wanted us to reinstate the budget, the tax cuts from 2012. And but on the issue of guns, we had a gun bill that we voted on to allow people to have and carry guns without any licensing and therefore no training. And I heard from people on both sides of that issue, but the majority were against that bill, and I did vote against it. But I did hear from several constituents who were very much in favor of that bill.
Yeah. Maria, I'm going to come back to that, I think. But Maria, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, I was listening to a bit of your previous appearance this morning on State House Blend, and you were, you know, new then, and I was wondering what you learned over that that first session.
Well, it was, first of all, 114-day sessions are all I know, because that's my 1 year in the House. I certainly hope we don't repeat that this year. You know, I went into it with my eyes open as to what the realities are in the Kansas legislature. But having said that, I certainly found it to be frustrating at times, although I did enjoy it. But it's frustrating when you end up voting on the losing side of nearly every major vote. It was frustrating to me to see the process. First of all, it's very slow, and that's not always a bad thing, that it takes usually takes a long time for legislation to work its way through, except for in the case of the school block grant bill, which made it through in 6 days. But just the political games that are played regarding what bills get advanced to vote on and which ones do not. There were several bills that came to us in the form of a conference committee report from the Senate, which we could only vote up or down. We could not debate it. Well, we could debate it, but we couldn't amend it. And a good example of that is the budget. The budget that the House Appropriations Committee approved and passed out just sat there. We didn't act on it. We instead later acted upon the Senate version of the appropriations bill, the budget, and all we could do is vote it up or down. We couldn't take out any line items. We couldn't amend it at all. And my colleagues and I felt like we were being disenfranchised. You know, we weren't able to adequately represent our districts because of the process.
You and we've had any number of lawmakers sit in this seat, moderates, Democrats, and also some conservatives who've sat there and said, you know what, we feel that there is a heavier hand coming out of leadership now than used to be the case in the Kansas legislature. And I'm wondering if you felt that heavy hand of leadership, or because of your moderate status, did you just feel ignored?
I felt ignored. I personally did not feel, directly to me, pressure to change my vote very often, unlike some of my other freshman colleagues. I don't know if it's because I have a brother in the House of Representatives as well, and they just figure we know how she's going to be and she's not going to change her position, but I just felt ignored. And, you know, for the most part, the moderate Republicans are on the fringes. We don't get the good committee assignments. None of us were on interim committees this summer, so it's not a good feeling when you don't feel like you're really part of the process.
Yeah. Cameron, what's it like to sit around and look at the news and watch the Kansas legislature? Does it feel to you frustrating? Does it feel to you humorous? Does it feel to you desperate? I'm wondering what it's like for a voter just to sit back and watch this.
You know, to me, it seems a bit inauthentic in the sense that what you just said is as an elected official, something that you're grappling with that is specific to what your role is. And for me to know that and to hear that means that I can put into action a voice or my personal influence and the influencers that I surround myself with to help solve some of these problems and to bring them up and to make sure that, you know, for individuals who I support, especially the ones that I elect, have a voice in this process and can actually make change part of their responsibility and their duty. So for me, it is a little inauthentic. It is at times comical. And to see, having lived in Boston and San Francisco for brief amounts of time, seeing friends on both coasts speak specifically to Kansas and how much of a joke it is. We chose to move back here from San Francisco. We live in Overland Park, Kansas. My partner and I, you would not expect that, at least from what's been put out there in the media about what people like myself endure as a Kansan, as a resident of Kansas. But I don't see that as being the future of Kansas, and that's the reason why we moved back.
Maria, what's it like to look at it as a journalist? I mean, there is, I find, you know, you try to stay down the middle. You try to think that the process is working for the benefit of everybody. But I have to say that when we watch it so closely, it's hard to do that sometimes for me. And I go to the side that says, man, this is just goofy. Do you have the same sort of issues that I do in looking at it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to hear an elected official say that they don't feel like they have a voice in the political process is kind of a profound thing, I think, you know, and something that I think we hear vaguely. You don't hear people necessarily say it, I think, as directly as Linda just did. It's shocking to me. I mean, I think everyday people a lot of times feel that they don't necessarily have the biggest part in the political process.
Right.
But surely the people that they've helped elect or that are elected should have that. But I think it's difficult to tell that as a story, you know, because it's not just Linda. It's a lot of people in the legislature as people are getting moved out of, you know, the Plum Committee assignments. And it's that's a hard story to sometimes convey, I think, in a way that makes sense. But it's an important one. This affects, you know, residents in Overland Park and Shawnee and all around.
Right, right. And a proud resident of the Dot, correct?
Yeah, yeah. That's where I live. I live in KCK.
And by the way, that's the reason that we invented podcasts, so that we can tell the more difficult.
We invented them.
Invented them. I'm going to move on to KDOT. And as I ask you this question, I'm going to ask you to pour me a little bit more coffee, if you wouldn't mind. A week or so ago, I did a story about all the money that's been swept out of KDOT. And we've been hearing this for a long time, going back, actually, a number of years. Thanks very much. And millions have been swept out. But now we finally have been able to put a number to what that means. And so what we've discovered is normally KDOT will do preservation work on about 1,200 miles of road every year. Next year, that's only going to be 200 miles. Usually, they do preservation work on about 100 bridges every year. That's going to be cut in half next year. So my question to you is, as the budget continues to be a challenge, continues to not look particularly good as we go into the future, is there a chance that any of this money is going to be put back into KDOT so that we can keep up with the preservation work on roads, which are generally considered to be pretty darn good in America?
We certainly need to put more money back into the dedicated highway fund, the T-Works program, but I don't see that happening anytime soon, given our budget reality. Until we take steps to shore up our revenues, stabilize our tax system, I don't see that happening. And it's something that should not have happened in the first place, but taking money from the Bank of KDOT is something that has happened for many years,
right. You know, with both Democrats and Republican governors,
many administrations.
Right.
It's just happening more now, and it's reached a critical mass now to where it's, I believe, $1 million a day is the amount being transferred out of KDOT. You know, you can't continue to do that forever. I have heard people say that, you know, to fix our budget problems in this next session, we probably will have to sweep some more money out of KDOT. But at some point, you can't do that anymore. The answer will be to fund current projects that are in the works, that there will have to be more bonding done, you know, borrowing, going into debt, and then using the money that was supposed to be for highway funds to switch to the general fund. And that's just not the way things should be done. As you said, our highways in Kansas have always been very good, but if we put off the maintenance, they won't continue to be good, and it'll become obvious to people that we should have used the money for what it was intended.
Yeah. So in the story, I had any number of people tell me that if we keep going down this road, all of a sudden, and I don't mean to make a pun there, but all of a sudden, Kansas roads are going to be like Missouri roads. I don't want to be too harsh on our friends over there in Missouri, but I think we know that the roads are not that great. Do you see that as a potential?
If we keep going down this path, yes. And, I've heard some consultants have recommended putting a thinner layer of asphalt down. You know, an engineer explained to me, you know, that's not going to work because the roads will just deteriorate that much faster. You know, we shouldn't have to do that. It should never have gotten to this point.
I want to talk about guns. Who wants to talk about guns?
All of us.
It's the topic
Cameron
of the
speaks
week.
For the Cameron speaks for the room. What's it like for you to come back to Overland Park and come back to Kansas and witness this gun debate?
I mean, what's it like coming back from California to Kansas where there's open carry, no requirement for a carry conceal license?
Well, if you want to put it that way,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So my opinion on gun control or just gun policy in general is varied. You know, my father is a cowboy action shooter and a dentist. He enjoys his time.
He probably
with his guns.
Owns that space,
yeah,
right?
I mean, no.
There's probably not
no,
a lot
no.
of
There's
us.
Actually quite a few. There's quite a few people.
No,
that
no, I'm
do
saying
this.
Cowboy and dentist action shooters.
Maybe.
Yeah.
He might be
oh,
the
that's
only
what I'm
one.
Saying that, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I can see for him where it's more of a sport type situation. Uh-huh. There's targets for time and all these other things. He's built a community around this enjoyment of what he gets out of that. On the other hand, I think the routes or, you know, the access to weapons like that in Kansas could potentially be a detriment for some of the things that we see occurring in society today. Just last week and, you know, apparently every day and then some for the last year. That said, there's also, I can see, the opportunity for law-abiding citizens who are participating in the open carry, no license, to stand up and protect. And is that their role? I'm not sure. So it's a really difficult thing to try and figure out what the rails of moderation on that will ultimately be. At the same time, I do want people to be safe, feel safe, and feel empowered and their rights. So it's kind of a challenge. I know that in California, it is definitely a different perspective as it is here in Kansas City or Kansas.
In Kansas, right. And I think we saw this week, did we not, Maria, that there's a bill moving through the Missouri General Assembly, or at least pre-filed in the Missouri General Assembly, which would allow essentially unfettered carrying of weapons on Missouri college campuses, which is where we're moving to in 2017 in Kansas. Did I see that right?
I think so. There have been a lot of bills pre-filed. I haven't kept up quite with all of them and all their details. But yeah, I did see something along those lines for sure.
Right. And Lynn, I want to go back to you right now. The Kansas Board of Regents is now grappling with how are they going to deal with 2017 when guns will be allowed on all Regents campuses and community colleges and technical schools, unless that building, particular building, has a metal detector and, of course, a guard to go with that. Do you see guns, the loosening of gun regulations, as part of the session, which is going to be coming up in about a month or so?
I do think that there will be some gun legislation. I have heard that there will be an attempt to extend the exemption for college campuses.
Interesting.
To allow, you know, in other words, right now, as of mid-years to 2017, people can carry guns into campus buildings with no problem. I think there's going to be a bill filed to just take that date out and have the exemption continue. I have heard from many people on many campuses who just say this is insane. We have to get back to common sense with our gun laws. My daughter at K-State, she told me of a conversation she had with her roommate who was scared to death. If this were to happen and her classes would be full of people who could potentially be carrying. Mm. I had a meeting this week with officials from Johnson County Community College, president of the college and some of their trustees, and met with some legislators. And this was a big topic that we have discussion. And the president said if they were to install metal detectors and all the safety equipment at all the doors that they would have to not comply with that law, it would cost upwards of $20 million, which is impossible.
Right.
You know, I've heard from faculty, students, parents of college students. None of them want this to go into effect.
You think it makes Kansas college campuses more dangerous?
Absolutely, I do. You know, if there were an active shooter situation and everyone had a gun, when the law enforcement come in and they see everyone is reacting with, you know, pulling out their gun, they don't know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are.
Yeah.
They're just going to start shooting people with a gun.
I want to take one more trip around the table, but first I just want to quickly ask you, coming up on Wednesday, the 9th Joint Committee on Education is meeting again. This, I believe, is their third of four meetings before the session. And I have to tell you that I followed this. I'll be covering the meeting on Wednesday. I can't figure out what they want to do. I don't know what is going to be the end product. So I want you to tell me.
Well, I have not attended any of their sessions, so I don't know for sure. But again, I will say there are no moderate Republicans on any of the interim committees or that one. You know, they're taking a look at rewriting the school finance formula again.
That's not going to happen in election year, though, is it?
No, I don't think that'll happen this year. You know, the deck is stacked with people who are not proponents of supporting public education, either adequately funding it or giving teachers the respect that they and support that they deserve. So, you know, I'm worried about what sort of proposals may come out of this interim committee and out of the education committee that has now been stripped of the last remaining moderates on the House Education Committee.
Yeah. Last trip around the table. Maria Carter, your final thought or question for Linda Gallagher.
I guess, you know, my question is, I hear a lot of frustration from people who are, you know, either on kind of the Republican-Democrat line or would consider themselves moderate Republicans. And it really does seem like they've been marginalized in the legislature and in a lot of the voting situations. For lack of a better term, the Tea Party or more conservative candidate wins the, you know, gets out the vote in the primary. And then, you know, it's do I vote for a Democrat that I may even have less power or do I vote for a Republican? And I think there was some sense that that tide may shift, you know, the last election with, Governor Brownback's poll numbers weren't looking great. I feel like the frustration's just grown and grown. And I'm always trying to figure out, has it grown enough to shift that? Is there going to be that shift back? Because the pendulum's really swung really far one way, it feels like. And are we all the way there? or is it going to start swinging back to moderates like yourself?
That is the $64,000 question, as they say. Many of us are wondering that same thing. You know, are enough people frustrated enough, angry enough about what's going on in Kansas who will remember that next year at election time? I'm telling everyone that will listen to me that they need to have August 2nd marked on their calendar, the Republican primary date. That's where it's at. You know, there are probably going to be many Republican primary races for legislative seats. In many cases, the Republican primary will probably determine the ultimate winner of that race. So many people of moderate voice don't turn out to vote in the August primary, and we absolutely have to get the vote out then, and in November as well.
Are moderates like yourself really trying to get that primary date in the mind of people?
Yes.
Is there a move there?
Absolutely.
I want to get, just before I get to Cameron, I want to ask you, you do not have a primary challenger right now, do you?
Not now, no.
Do you expect one?
I have to operate under the premise that I probably will, yes. That's the environment we're operating in here.
Right. But there's been nobody who's stepped forward or hinted, but.
No.
Yeah, but there is, I think there's going to be a lot of primaries, and conservatives, Republicans will have primaries, and moderate Republicans will
Correct.
Have primaries, don't you think?
Yes.
All right. Cameron, your final thought or question for Linda Gallagher.
So, you know, for me personally, I think my overall knowledge of the political process and how things are supposed to happen is somewhat limited compared to what's being expressed here in the room. But I think what I do know is how to elicit the sentiment from people. And I think what's been most enlightening for me in this conversation is being able to listen to you as an elected official share your concerns with the way the political process is currently unfolding in Kansas. And so I would say that my commitment coming out of this experience here at State House Blend is to, you know, in any opportunity to connect to make sure that the people in your district, but also the people in Kansas, can react to your opinions, not your political affiliation, such that they are, you know, touched, moved, and inspired to actually take action in the state of Kansas and become part of the process, myself included, having not invested as much time and energy I need to actually make a difference. So I would extend that opportunity to you should you be interested. And again, I appreciate the opportunity for being here.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. You know, we need more people like you who may not have been politically active in the past to, you know, wake up and realize what's going on in Kansas and actively get out there and work on behalf of candidates who will represent the way they feel.
Mm-hmm. We have to leave it there. My colleague Maria Carter, also my boss Maria Carter from KCUR, thank you for being here. Cameron Barabin from Overland Park, thanks for coming in. It was great to see you. Linda, you know what's coming up next. At this part of the show, this is another way to get to know you just a little bit better, and you get to pick the walk-off music. What's on your mind?
That is Listen to the Music by the Doobie Brothers.
Our first Doobie Brothers call, I believe.
One of my absolute favorite songs, but it's appropriate here because I think the voters of Kansas need to wake up and face the music or listen to the music and understand what's going on in our state.
Outstanding. By the way, this is one of my favorite, this might be one of my favorite walk-off music. And next time we do the State House Blend music show, this one's definitely going to be on it. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. There's the Doobie Brothers right there. Find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend. And our friends down there on Up to Date with Steve Kraske clear out a little room for us Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Want to sit right there where Cameron is and have coffee and donuts with us? I'll bet you do. Email me. I'm sam@kcur.org. A fan of the Twitter? I'll bet you are that as well. Follow me on Twitter. I'm @SamZeff. And you can follow my co-host, Brian Ellison. He's @PTSBrian. I'm Sam Zeff. Thanks for being here. See you around the radio.